This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Theater Iran, Exposing the Big Lie. But first, a big surprise. We have on the phone with us the stalwart, the fabulous, the wonderful attorney, Lynn Stewart. Lynn is free on bail pending appeal of her conviction on charges of, quote, conspiracy to aid and abet terrorism. And she will be in California here in the Bay Area and also on the West Coast for a tour, fighting back. No one shall be tortured, falsely imprisoned, or denied basic democratic rights. That is the theme of the upcoming February 23rd to 28th Bay Area tour of Lynn Stewart, attorney Michael Ratner, and Pam Africa of the Mumia Defense Committee. Ralph?
Yes, well, our Mother Courage is with us on the line, and I want to emphasize that this is a major and important tour, 18 meetings, rallies, receptions, and media events, and we're encouraging all those who will be viewing us on cable TV and community television in the East Bay and North Bay and San Francisco areas, be sure to be at the receptions and the meetings for Lynn, which are critical meetings in which the entire apparatus of framing of victim peoples and particularly the assault on democratic rights will be exposed and challenged.
First, Friday, February 23rd at the Women's Building, a reception at 5:30 followed by a mass rally at 7:30. And for those in the East Bay, on Saturday, February 24th, again at 5:30, a Berkeley reception at the Middle East Children's Alliance at 901 Parker in Berkeley, and at 7:30, again a mass rally, this time at the King Middle School on Rose Street. And for those in the South Bay, on Sunday, February 25th, in Palo Alto, a reception at 1 p.m. at the Fireside Room, and at 2 p.m., a mass rally at the Unitarian Universalist Church. And on Monday, the 26th, Lynn will be in Fresno at 5:30, a reception, and at 7 p.m., a rally. And Tuesday in Santa Rosa, and Wednesday in Sacramento at the UC Davis School of Law. For more information, please go to www.lynnstewart.org, and you can call 415-255-1085. Again, that's Lynn Stewart, LynnStewart.org. And now let's go to Lynn Stewart. Ralph?
Yes, Lynn. We want to, of course, welcome you once again on Taking Aim, and we're so happy and delighted that you'll be out here on the West Coast. And again, we urge every one of our listeners and all our viewers here to be sure to show up, be sure to be there. Lynn, talk to us about the present status of the case and what you'll be doing on your tour out here.
Okay. Well, the present status is we're pending appeal. The government has taken the step of appealing the sentence. As many of your listeners know, we mounted a huge campaign to make the judge be the right person. And he indeed did respond. He gave me a sentence so far below the guidelines that people feel that we may be in some difficulty were the government to appeal. And of course, the government being the government, that's what they did. That means they are going to go to the appellate court with the sole issue on their behalf of is the sentence too lenient. You know, it just makes you know, Ralph, that you're in the right struggle when they act in such a manner. The judge laid out his reasons. The judge said, you know, we're not sending this 68-year-old cancer victim who has rendered so much service as an attorney, not just to her clients, but also to the nation as a whole, he said, words I never thought I'd hear a federal judge say about me. They can't leave it alone. You know, if it's wet paint, they have to touch it.
In fact, his sentence was 28 months, and the prosecution was seeking 30 years.
Exactly.
30 long years, hard years.
So they're going back to their original position, Maya. So that's somewhat of a red flag for us. You know, it's worrisome. People have suggested maybe I could compromise and tell them we won't raise issues on appeal if they won't raise issues. But my position has consistently been, since the moment they put the handcuffs on me, I laugh about this because it was so unnecessary, but that is them over the top.
Right.
And
well, you had the singing attorney general announcing his intentions to frame you on David Letterman's show,
yes.
The psalm-singing Ashcroft.
Yes, where is he anyway, Ralph?
Yes, his eyes are rolled to heaven at the moment as he...
but we
so not to say anything, not to invite unhappiness, but he certainly disappeared very quickly from the whole political. He's probably making millions as a quote advisor somewhere,
right?
Maybe on collecting the debt in Zambia. These voters.
Right, that's their task. But
yeah.
You know, Lynn, last week on Taking Aim, we dealt with the remarkable testimony of Zbigniew Brzezinski, of all people, such a stalwart figure in the entire military intelligence apparatus, the fellow who set in motion the Saddam Hussein attack on Iran and a million casualties thereof, the architect of the grand chessboard and the creation of the apparatus in Afghanistan of Osama bin Laden, CIA operations all. And here is Brzezinski before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he states there that the entire so-called war on terror is a fabrication and a myth and a self-fulfilling prophecy out of imperial hubris and a reckless determination to control the lives and dominate the fate of other people, says this figure of the ruling class. And he goes on to state, Lynn, and it has bearing here, that the contrivance to initiate a war long planned against Iran and dismantle that country is based upon fabricated evidence, and Brzezinski states, so determined are they, regardless of the facts, that you can anticipate that they will stage an event, an attack in the United States, which they will blame on Iran as a casus belli. And the Foreign Relations Committee is eyes wide are listening to this testimony, and Brzezinski goes on to say, don't forget the memorandum that was prepared from the talks of Bush and Blair before the attack on Iraq, when they stated they had no weapons of mass destruction, so-called, and they would have to stage something spectacular. What is that? Paint a United Nations U.S. plane with UN colors and shoot it down and blame it on the Iraqis. Now, this breaking ranks by Brzezinski has bearing because he's stating, and it's something that was followed up by Hillary Mann, the National Security Director of Iranian and Persian Gulf Affairs under the Bush administration from 2001 to 2004, issuing a sober warning about provocative acts that are of U.S. origin attributed to Iran. They're breaking ranks here. They're actually exposing the nature of U.S. operations. It has bearing on the framing of the Sheikh, and I think it has direct bearing on terrorizing the lawyers who defend the unfairly accused in the United States. On point.
So I think I just, you know, the Maya stated, you know, the purpose of this trip is not just to hug and greet the people who have supported me, although that's certainly part of it. But the real theme of it is to fight back. And, you know, we've got to get people to connect the imperialist dots, so as to speak. People have to be able to see that what the government is now doing with Iran is exactly what it did with Iraq and what it's done with countless other countries where it hasn't gone so far, perhaps, as to invade. But these two, the one real invasion and the one planned invasion. And, you know, it fits in so perfectly with this. There is a new plan now promulgated, Ralph, with regard to the oil reserves of Iraq. We all always knew this was about the oil, and now they have put forth a plan that literally takes away control of the oil fields from the Iraqis. So, you know, people have got to understand that fighting back is not something you do on a Saturday afternoon at a demonstration with your friends. It's something you have to be totally consistent with, and you have to give it our best and really perhaps our final effort.
And Lynn, your case is really key because if you attack the attorneys, if you make the attorneys fearful of defending people who are accused by the government, you cut the legs off of people who are thinking of dissenting and who are organizing dissent against government policy, the ruling class policy that harms all of us throughout the world. And that is why this is a key case, and that is why we each and every one of us must mobilize. Aside from attending the rallies, is there something particular that people can do at this point? Originally, when the judge was considering the sentence, everyone mobilized and wrote letters. At this point, what are people to do?
Well, that, I think, is something that we're going to try to talk about at these speeches and at these rallies and at these mobilizations and at these coffee clutches, is what to do. I always have felt, my case is crucial because the continuing attacks on lawyers, which is something I'm going to talk about, the climate of fear in which lawyers operate, which is something I'm going to talk about. And I also think, though, I just have to think about, can we mobilize the grassroots? Can we get people have sort of pushed up a little spear of grass here, maybe, and can we nurture that in some way? One of the leftist newspapers said the Democrats are leading people into Heartbreak Hotel. And it's such an apt way of looking at it. It's going to be heartbreak for people who believe in the electoral system. But can we snatch them back? Can we make them understand there's more at stake than just who you're electing? That's the real question before us all right now, it seems to me.
Well put. And I want to remind everybody to go to your website, www.lynnestewart.org. For a complete itinerary, and you can telephone 415-255-1085. Again, Lynn will be here in the Bay Area this coming weekend, Friday, your opportunity in San Francisco, 5:30 at a reception at the Women's Building, and following that, a lecture with Lynn and attorney Michael Ratner, who defended those imprisoned falsely in Guantanamo, and Pam Africa of the Mumia Defense Committee. Again, Friday, 5:30, reception, followed by a mass rally at the Women's Building, and Saturday at the Middle East Children's Alliance, who one of the sponsors of the tour, 5:30 Berkeley reception, followed by a meeting at the King Middle School.
I want to say that, Lynn, the charges and the trial of the Sheikh Abdul Rahman were based upon an entire government contrivance, the prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald. And as we've been reporting on Taking Aim over the years, the 1993 bombing of which the Sheikh was accused was in fact an FBI and Mossad operation, their hands all over those events. Mm-hmm. So the false category of terror has been deployed to prepare for imperial reach, but above all, to prepare for the scuttling of our democratic rights and autocratic rule here. And that's why your case is in the cockpit of the government's plan to terrorize the people of the United States, because the attorney who defends the falsely accused becomes enfolded within the false charges themselves and victimized in turn. That's a signal to all of us to shut our mouths and to cower in fear. So your case embodies the resistance and the fight back against a degenerating system and the prospect of autocratic rule.
Well, Ralph, thank you for those kind words, but I know they're offered as a true comrade, and that we all understand that the history thrusts upon us an opportunity to do something. And this was my opportunity, and I have been committed to this struggle for 30 years, and I am still committed to it, and I would like to end up someday having at least back in the saddle again and able to be a lawyer for the disenfranchised.
And that's so, what's at stake here, and we've got to win that appeal, because that appeal is to not only put you back in the saddle, as you say, Lynn, but to free us all to fight this imperial system and the destruction of our rights. Lynn, we're so looking forward to your being here. I want to alert all our listeners that Lynn will be with us in studio next week for the full hour, and we're looking forward to that. And once again, please, everybody out in the Bay Area, come to the reception, come to the meetings, come to the rallies, join in the struggle, and join Lynn Stewart.
We'll be seeing.
Maya, can I just get one word?
Oh, please.
There is also going to be at least a speaking and a rally in Marin County. I think that's in the Saturday afternoon. I say this because I know my good friend and fellow lawyer, Steve Bingham, will be there. I'm looking very much forward to seeing him.
That's right. I overlooked it. 2 p.m., a Marin rally at College of Marin Student Services Center in the cafeteria, and that's in Kentfield. That's 2 p.m. in Marin on Saturday.
Great. Well,
thanks
so much, Lynn. It's been wonderful talking to you, and we'll look forward to talking to you and seeing you next week.
Face to face. Thanks, Al. Thanks, Maya.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye now, Lynn.
And now, on to the regular program, Taking Aim, Theater Iran, Exposing the Big Lie. And we begin with an article from the New Statesman, published February 19th. Iran ready to attack. This program continues our ongoing coverage, which began before the WBAI fund drive with Upping the Ante, and last week we discussed the U.S. plans for attacking Iran, including all the carrier groups, the aircraft carrier groups that are in the Gulf, particularly at the Straits of Hormuz. New Statesman, February 19th, Iran ready to attack. Quote, American military operations for a major conventional war with Iran could be implemented any day. They extend far beyond targeting suspect WMD, that's weapons of mass destruction facilities, and will enable President Bush to destroy Iran's military, political, and economic infrastructure overnight using conventional weapons. British military sources told the New Statesman, on condition of anonymity, that, quote, the U.S. military switched its whole focus to Iran, as soon as Saddam Hussein was kicked out of Baghdad. It continued the strategy even though it had American infantry bogged down in fighting the insurgency in Iraq. Now note the important revelation by the New Statesman. The U.S. Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines have all prepared battle plans and spent 4 years building bases and training for Operation Iranian Freedom. Admiral Fallon, the new head of the U.S. Central Command, has inherited computerized plans under the name TIRANT, that's T-I-R-A-N-N-T, Theater Iran near term. The Bush administration has made much of sending a second aircraft carrier to the Gulf, but it's a tiny part of the preparations, notes the New Statesman. Post 9/11, the U.S. Navy can put six carriers into battle at a month's notice. Two carriers in the region, the USS John C. Stennis and the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower, could quickly be joined by three more now at sea, the USS Ronald Reagan, the Harry S. Truman, and the Theodore Roosevelt, as well as the Nimitz. Each carrier force includes hundreds of cruise missiles. Then there are the Marines, who were not tied down fighting in Iraq. Several Marine forces are assembling, each with its own aircraft carrier. Three carrier forces can each conduct a version of the D-Day landings. They come with landing craft tanks, jump jets, thousands of troops, and hundreds more cruise missiles. The Marines have the USS Boxer and the USS Bataan carrier forces in the Gulf, and probably also the Kearsarge and the Bonhomme Richard. Three others, the Peleliu, the Wasp, and the Iwo Jima, are ready to join them.
Well, Maya, what's very important about this basically alarm article in the New Statesman in London is that it's based on British military intelligence, and this is what they disclose. Quote, the task is to destroy Iranian forces, attack oil tankers, secure oil fields and installations. This is a mission for which they have been training since the Iranian Revolution of 1979. Emphasize this. This is an operation in preparation since 1979. All of the lying contrivances about the Iranian preparation for having civilian use of nuclear energy, all of the lying provocations about supposed Iranian armament being deployed in Iraq, which we shall demolish and address shortly, is but the lying pretext, the false flag cover for a U.S. military operation long in preparation. As the New Statesman discloses, the USS Boxer, the USS Bataan carrier forces in the Gulf, the USS Kearsarge, the USS Bonhomme Richard, three other carriers, the USS Peleliu, the USS Wasp, the USS Iwo Jima, are in place and ready to join. Headquarters staff will manage these forces and was moved from Virginia to Bahrain in preparation for an imminent attack. They cite Vice President Dick Cheney as having been particularly involved in preparing this operation and assigning Marine generals to the task. They now, these Marine generals, the New Statesman reports, have been put in the top jobs at NATO, the Pentagon, and in charge of all nuclear weapons. This is the first time that Marines have been placed in these posts. What's happened here is that sectors of the military, beholden to those who are preparing this permanent war, this campaign for the dismantling of each Middle Eastern country in its turn, have been put in charge, put in place. Trident submarines, the Air Force bombers and missiles are now under the orders of a Marine General, James Cartwright, integrated into what is called Global Strike Plan. They are on permanent 12-hour readiness. There has been some discussion of these plans by William Arkin and Hans Christensen, particularly with reference to the use of nuclear weapons. But these forces are not only in regard to nuclear weapons. These generals, this Marine general is planning an attack on Iran with, quote, at least 10,000 targets to be hit in a single raid, warplanes flying from the U.S. and Diego Garcia, unlimited funding for the military technology for smart bombs placed at a new level preparatory to these attacks, bunker-busting bombs that weigh 250 pounds. According to Boeing, the GPU-39 small-diameter bomb quadruples, and the firebomber power of U.S. warplanes, compared to those that were in use as recently as 2003, are magnitudes higher in their destructive capacity. A single stealth or B-52 bomber will attack 100 to 300 individual targets with a meter accuracy using the global positioning system. The U.S. Air Force, the New Statesman continues, will hit the last known position of every Iranian military units, their political leaders, and the global strike means that any signal can be the launching point to do overnight in the entirety of Iran what was done throughout Serbia and Lebanon.
Ralph, this is not just a show of force. Over the years, the U.S. has, since the breakup of the Soviet Union and the destruction of what was called the Eastern Bloc, the U.S. has been building bases throughout Eastern Europe. We mentioned last week the anti-missile defense bases in the Czech Republic and Poland, and now the developments in the Balkans, Bulgaria and Romania, two U.S. Air Force bases in Bulgaria, one on Romania's Black Sea coast, which are preparatory to launching an attack on Iran. As well, there are three U.S. bases in Azerbaijan. And as we've discussed over the years for the Gulf, there are U.S. bases throughout the Gulf with the strategic center in Doha. Now, Camp Doha. Now, this is critical to what you've mentioned, the global strike, which is 12-hour readiness. And again, this is not verbiage. You don't send this expensive carrier troop. And this, it's very, very expensive to maintain a carrier troop with 5,000 people and all the Air Force strike planes in readiness in the Gulf. You don't do this just for verbiage. We have in the Los Angeles Times an article by Tony Perry, one of the embedded reporters. The U.S. now embeds the journalists along with the troops. And we saw the result with Judith Miller, formerly of the New York Times, when she was embedded and created all the false Pentagon statements about aluminum tubes in Iraq preparatory to nuclear war and also weapons of mass destruction, germ warfare by the Iraqis. What?
Judith Miller was, in fact, running one of the actual special units, military units, it's now disclosed. She was actually directing its location, and when commanders were disturbed about the fact that this intelligence figure posing as a journalist was running a special forces unit in the United States military in Iraq, and they wanted to delay and defer an operation that Judith Miller had determined, she said she would expose them in the New York Times, and they backed off. She was put in charge. She not only conducted a special forces operation of the United States authorities while reporting supposedly as a reporter for the New York Times, but she carried out through this special forces unit interrogation of those who were then tortured and came forth with information that she reported in the New York Times. This is and the New York Times knows this. The New York Times orchestrated these lying reports of Judith Miller, just as they did her colleague and co-writer Michael Gordon a few days ago with all of the fabrications regarding Iranian weapons in Iraq.
Ralph, and now to another embedded reporter, Tony Perry of the Los Angeles Times. He is aboard the USS Firebolt in the Gulf. The Firebolt is a small Navy craft. It's a patrol ship. And he says, every day, 30 sailors on this coastal patrol ship in the Persian Gulf are on alert. At 170 feet in length, the Firebolt and similar craft are the smallest and possibly the lightest armed vessels in the U.S. Navy. But they will be joined in the region by the Navy's most heavily armed behemoths, the 1,092-foot-long carrier John Stennis, the crew of 5,000 people, as I mentioned before, and more than 80 warplanes. The Stennis heads the strike force of destroyers, cruisers, and submarines. And then there are the ships that are the mine sweeps. Now, they're located in the Strait of Hormuz, where the world, transit point for much of the world's oil supplies. In fact, 40% of the world's oil supplies pass in tankers through the Strait of Hormuz, which is a 34-mile-wide choke point at the southern edge of the 600-mile-long Gulf. And it's actually almost impossible for all the carrier fleets to turn around when they're in the Strait of Hormuz. It's quite possible that the United States is looking for the Iranians to attack one of the U.S. planes and one of the U.S. ships that are in the Gulf.
Well, Maya, what they're going to do, as Brzezinski was indicated, and as Hilary Mann, former National Security Council Director for Iranian and Persian Gulf Affairs under Bush from 2001 to 2004, has declared in an interview on CNN, they will push a provocative act to justify their strikes on crucial targets in Iraq. In other words, the staged event will be an attack the United States wages on its own forces or within the United States and then imputed to Iran, setting up Iran. Bush declares that Iran's arms role in Iraq is certain. Sheryl Stolberg and Mark Santara report in the New York Times, it is certain. A specific accusation that Iran is undermining security in Iraq, that the Iranians are involved in the attacks on United States forces. Mr. Bush called it preposterous that the United States was drawing unwarranted conclusions about Iraq's role. Quote, I can say with certainty that the Quds force is a part of the Iranian government and is providing sophisticated IEDs that harm our troops. I want to repeat, the Quds force may be ordered from the top echelons of the government, but if it's happening without their ordering, that might even be worse. Says Bush, they're setting up Iran. And to return for the moment to Dan Plesh and the New Statesman, the U.S. and Iran are engaged in a process that has an ultimate political objective, the fragmentation of Iran into regions. Bush administration has convinced itself that an Iran of the regions will emerge from a post-rubble Iran. They are going to carve up Iran as they are carving up Iraq into discrete areas, fragmenting the country into ethnic and religious components, part of the Zionist plan that the U.S. military and imperialists adopted, the Oded Yinon plan we've talked about so frequently.
This is Taking Aim with
Rav Shonman
and Maya Shon. Our program today, Theater Iran, Exposing the Big Lie. Ralph, you were mentioning the Cheryl Stolberg report in the New York Times February 15th about the President Bush's press conference last Wednesday when he was speaking in the East Room of the White House. And in fact, what he was trying to say is that it doesn't matter whether it's the Iranian government or it's not the Iranian government. We're convinced that Iran is behind the attacks on the U.S. military forces. It's not the insurgency, mind you. It is not the insurgency, and it's a Sunni insurgency. What President Bush neglects to say is that the Iranian government, and Iran is primarily a Shiite country, and is backing the Shia who are the main force of the new Iraqi government and who are sponsoring the U.S. control over Iraq.
Well, the fabrication is so absurdly obvious here because the entire resistance in Iraq has been waged by Sunni forces, Sunni insurgency, Sunni resistance, the former army of Saddam Hussein. The Sunni-based resistance is the armed resistance in Iraq. The Shia militia and the Shia armed population, which is a vast majority of the population, has not participated in the armed struggle in Iraq. Were they to so participate, the United States would be swept out of there overwhelmingly and swiftly. The Sunni resistance comprises but 20% of the population, supported though it may be by the vast majority of the people of Iraq. This attempt to impute to the Shia militia responsibility for the armed struggle in Iraq and to state that it is Iran that is involved in orchestrating this with weaponry flies in the face of everything that the Bush administration has been stating itself about the struggle of the population in Iraq. Indeed, as you say, it's a Shia administration that the U.S. has set up as a puppet government in Iraq.
Ralph, the reason that President Bush had to come forward with his Alice in Wonderland statement, his statement was, my point is, what's worse, them, meaning the government of Iran, ordering it and it happening, or them not ordering it and it's happening? It's reminiscent of Donald Rumsfeld. And the reason he had to say this is that General Peter Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, on February 14th, and this is on February 13th, Tuesday of last week, immediately after the show and tell by the Pentagon about Iranian involvement with serial numbers and fragments of so-called explosively formed projectiles, immediately after the show and tell, and trying to say that the top levels of the Iranian government were involved in supplying the insurgents, that is the rebellion. I hate to use the word insurgents. That is the just rebellion against U.S. Control in Iraq. General Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, came out and said that does not translate into the Iranian government per se being directly involved in doing this. And this was undermining the U.S. position. And that's why President Bush had his press conference to try to shore up the U.S. position. Ralph.
The distinction that Bush makes, this has to do with the lead story in Newsweek and by Associated Press, U.S. top Iran officials ordering bombs in Iraq. Instructions came from the highest levels, officer says. Now, what's at issue here is not whether the government is doing it in Iran, but whether the top leadership of the government is doing it. The Bush position is that the government is doing it all right, but the question that he was challenged on by Pace was whether the top leadership was involved. Now, the General Raymond Odierno had stated for Bush that the U.S. has proof that the top leadership of Iran is arming the Iraqi militants. And indeed, Odierno went on to say that for every IED explosion in Iraq, a bomb should be dropped on Iran. That is the, here is the USA Today. U.S. blames Iran for the new bombs in Iraq, contributing through Gates 70% of U.S. casualties to Iranian arsenal and Iranian orders.
And Ralph, this is making it illicit for anyone to arm the rebellion of a people for their self-determination and not to be controlled by imperial powers.
Yes. Well, what is at stake here, as the article by Frank Rich in Sunday New York Times, Oh, What a Malleable War, makes clear, is that all of these accusations with respect to Iran were in fact trotted out by the Bush administration as early as 2003. The very identical accusations, which were totally discredited, were then reiterated in 2005. He says, darn right, the administration has warned about these weapons twice in the past 18 months. They're there. We know it. Since 2003, he reports in the New York Times. So they are recycling fake information that was discredited and exposed in 2003 and then in 2005 and then in 2006. He says, oh, what a malleable war Iraq has been. First waged to vanquish Saddam's non-existent nuclear arsenal, his non-existent collaboration with al-Qaeda, then to spread a non-existent democracy throughout the Middle East, now being rebranded as a fight against Tehran. This saber rattling is stated by Bush not to be a pretext for war. It is a pretext for prolonging and expanding in a disastrous war, says Frank Rich.
He also mentions that that it's important for the administration to create a recognizable face. In other words, the enemy, as it did with Saddam Hussein, so it will do with the president of Iran.
Maya, the Daily Telegraph in London ran a story that the Pentagon blames Iran immediately for 170 U.S. troops' deaths by the use of sophisticated bombs. And senior defense officials in Baghdad are cited in the Daily Telegraph on the 12th of February as, quote, supplying explosively formed projectiles used against coalition forces. The highest levels of Iran's regime are responsible for this, they state. The machining of the weapons, they state, could only have been completed in Iran, and only the highest levels of Tehran's regime would have authorized the transfer of these arms to Iraq. Well, they make the mistake, does the Daily Telegraph, as does, in fact, the U.S. military intelligence itself, of publishing photographs of these supposed mortar weapons of Iran that were, quote, and the photograph has a label, manufactured in 2006. It gives 81-millimeter mortar rounds, 3-2006, stamped on the actual weapon itself.
Right. These are 81-millimeter high-explosive mortars that were supposedly seized by Iraqi police southeast of Baghdad on January 13th, 2007. It's a roadside bomb. And this is different than the huge canisters of the explosively formed projectiles, which, as you mentioned, the reason they say that Iran is involved is because you need sophisticated machine processing in order to assemble what is basically a tube with the bomb inside.
Well, let's go to the evidence here. As Boomin Tribune has exposed in a startling article called What's Wrong with This Picture, several things. The dating does not use the Iranian calendar. The use of the Roman alphabet on the markings of the shell instead of the use of Farsi. Iran is a Persian-speaking country. Farsi is the language, and all of their ordnance is stamped in their own language, in their own script. The use of the Roman alphabet for the markings rather than Farsi is a dead giveaway. The Iranian armaments that have ever been captured or found have their markings printed in Farsi, a form of the Arabic alphabet. In fact, a significant portion of the newer ordnance, as indicated by Farsi markings stenciled on it, is the touchstone of Iranian ordnance. So, in essence, what has happened here is that the United States has supplied a fake weapon with American-inspired markings on it. It is not Iranian ordnance whatsoever. And the smoking gun of expose, through not only through Boomin Tribune, but through other sources, in the Huffington Post, Eason Gordon. And Eason Gordon is a former CEO of Predict. And he spent 23 years with CNN as chief news executive and president of news gathering and international networks. And he says, stop this now. There's no name allegations. This false sourcing identifying evidence against Iran. He says U.S. officials are hiding behind a cloak of anonymity in presenting detailed evidence about Iran supplying anti-U.S. forces in Iran with weaponry. In fact, it is fake evidence. Fake evidence, and Eason Gordon is an establishment figure. But more to the point, brothers and sisters, the Sabon Center, which is part of the Jaffe Strategic...
The Jaffe Center for Strategic Studies at Tel Aviv University.
Yes, it's Tel Aviv University, and it is actually, interestingly enough, an Israeli operation. The Sabon Center for Middle East Policy is part of the Brookings Institution. They just had a forum entitled America and in Israel Confronting a Middle East in Turmoil. It's instructive to see who they have there. The keynote address was by the Israeli Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni. Other speakers included former President Bill Clinton, Israeli former Prime Minister Shimon Peres, Senator Hillary Rodman Clinton, the Israeli Minister for Strategic Affairs, Avigdor Lieberman, the senior Bush administration figure, David Welch, who is Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs. The list goes on, and it includes the Israeli Minister of Education, the Secretary of State Senior Advisor on Iraq, George Tenet, former Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Prime Minister Ehud Barak, former Israeli National Security Advisor Giora Eland, the head of Shin Bet, Amos Yadlin, the Director of Israeli Military Intelligence, and of course, the pimps for the Imperium, Thomas Friedman and Ted Koppel. Thomas Friedman, the Hannibal Lecter of American journalism, all there to orchestrate. But here's what is interesting about this particular assemblage. They had published a military strength document on all Middle Eastern countries.
It's called the Middle East Military Balance, and it was published February 21st, 2006, by the Jaffe Center for Strategic Studies at Tel Aviv University.
Guess what, brothers and sisters? We checked out the arsenal that is described. This was updated in 2006 for Iran. The artillery that is cited, namely all of the models and the examples of the and quantities of our Iranian artillery that have been monitored by this spy apparatus for Iran, do not include the 81-millimeter mortar that has been falsely attributed to the Iranians in this Daily Telegraph fake false flag evidence report. There you have it, brothers and sisters. The charges that are ascribed to Iran are fabricated.
Ralph, there's further fabrication going on in Europe, and we have to note that it is primarily the European newspapers that have been talking, writing extensively about the U.S. and the Israeli preparations for a nuclear strike against Iran. But also it is the European newspapers that have revealed the work, the collaboration of the European Union member states in upping the ante against Iran. On February 14th, Daniel Dombé, writing from Brussels in the Financial Times, the EU, referring to the European Union paper, cast doubt on nuclear talks with Iran. And he said these doubts have now crystallized in a confidential European Union paper on Iran obtained by the Financial Times that paints a picture of a country almost within reach of the nuclear bomb, which has increasing regional clout, but also suffers from potentially crippling economic weakness. The document circulated last week to all 27 European Union member states concedes that Iran will probably acquire sufficient capacity to enrich enough uranium for weapons program, quote, at some stage. This is at some hypothetical stage. And it sounds a skeptical note on whether negotiations over the issue will succeed. According to this confidential paper circulated among the European Union member states, Tehran may have enough fissible material for a bomb by 2010, although it'll take several more years to weaponize it. Now, this is, again, creating the furor, the hullabaloo that Iran, as opposed to all the states of Europe, as opposed to Pakistan, as opposed to India, as opposed to countries throughout the world, that it is illicit for Iran to have a nuclear program for generating electricity.
But Maya, there's a fundamental point here. As we cited in our show last week on the peninsula in Qatar, that the U.S. is fabricating evidence against Iran, that the Iran's top nuclear negotiator, Ali Larijani, had documented how the United States is fabricating Iran's involvement in attacks on U.S. troops in Iraq. Javad Zarif, the ambassador to the United Nations for Iran, stated that Iran has no involvement and no interest in providing weapons to any insurgent group in Iraq.
And, Ralph, it's not only the stepping up the escalating verbiage, the fabrications about Iran, with now the involvement of Iranians in attacking U.S. troops in Iraq. And the reason they're doing that, and the U.S. has been saying that a strike against Iran would be self-defense, and it quotes the United Nations resolution declaration that says that any sovereign country has a right for self-defense and can attack another country.
Well, Maya,
but that is misreading what is meant by the whole notion of self-defense.
That's an interesting illustration of the false flag operation of American imperialism, because what the United States was doing was invoking Article 51 in the United Nations Charter, which allows for a country that is being attacked to respond. And, of course, Article 51 is designed by to be deployed by the United States as a rationale for a Hitlerian aggression against Iran, as indeed was unlaunched against Iraq, and indeed is planned against 60 countries, and to attribute their attack to self-defense by false flag operations. February 11th, 2007, breaking news, Americans caught with Iranian weapons in Iraq. Taylor Mash's report, United States officials in Baghdad are in possession of Iranian-made weapons. In fact, it is the United States special units themselves that have been deploying these weapons. The BBC's Jane Peel, attending the briefing in Baghdad, has confirmed this. the United States has been caught with the Iranian weapons, so-called Iranian weapons, which are then imputed to Iran.
Ralph, talking about manufacturing intelligence as a basis for going to war, we have to understand that at the same time that this is taking place, the defense departments, that is the War Department of the United States, the misnamed Defense Department, the Inspector General came out with his report to the Senate Armed Services Committee entitled Review of Pre-Iraqi War Activities of the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. And he's speaking about the then Undersecretary of Defense, Douglas Feith, who had headed both the Office of Plans and the Policy Counterterrorism Evaluation Group. The two sections were employed in the attempt to substantiate the two-pronged lie that was used by the Bush administration for the invasion against Iraq. And that was manufacturing evidence that Baghdad was stockpiling weapons of mass destruction, and secondly, to substantiate allegations that the Saddam Hussein regime had forged close ties to the al-Qaeda network and blamed Saddam Hussein and the relationship with the al-Qaeda network for the attacks of September 11th, 2001. And this terrorized the American people. And in fact, the Inspector General came out and said that Feith's office had presented reports, quote, of dubious quality or reliability. It was unreliable intelligence. In fact, they were saying that Feith's office was fabricating the work that went on to be the basis for the U.S. attack against Iraq.
Maya, the terrorist shoe is on the imperialist foot. We have been describing the false accusations against Iran, the fabricated evidence of Iranian involvement in Iraq. Here is MSNBC, NBC, bomb kills 11 on military bus in Iran. A car loaded with explosives blew up yesterday near a bus, killing 11 people and wounding 31. Now, the responsibility for this attack inside Iran was claimed by a supposed Sunni militant group in Iran, which doesn't exist. And Xinhua, the People's Daily news bulletin in China, states the following. The weapons used in the attack in southeastern Iran came from the United States. Explosive devices and arsenals used in the attack in the southeast Iranian city of Zahedan came from the United States. It was disclosed. The documents, photographs, and film footage shows the explosives and arsenal used in the attack were from the United States itself. The the so-called Jundala, the Sunni militant group, which is composed of tribal leaders from the Sistan Baluchistan province, in fact, are operatives of U.S. Special Forces. And indeed, the operation in Iran is part of a U.S. terror campaign to destabilize Iran. And here is the report by the Fars News Agency on February 17th. The terrorist plot for assassinating Sunni leaders in Iran is disclosed. In fact, Iran has documented that the wide-scale plot for fomenting religious and ethnic conflict in Iran through assassinating randomly Sunni and tribal leaders is, in fact, a United States operation. And the Xinhua report confirms this. The Iran is going to present evidence of the U.S. responsibility for these recent blasts. The Director General for Political Affairs in Sistan and Baluchistan stated the United States and Britain are behind the recent terrorist attacks in the city of Zahedan. Washington and London face serious challenge in the Middle East region. They are targeting the Islamic Republic. They are seeking to create trouble through in Iran through a series of terrorist attacks, and indeed the Fars News Agency, in a detailed report on February 19th by Mahdi Darius Nazimuraya, confirms that this is not just in Zahedan. Throughout Iran, the United States special intelligence units are carrying out terror attacks.
Along with the Pakistani government, he says, and the Inter-Service Intelligence, the ISI, of Pakistan.
Indeed, as Marjorie Cohen wrote on February 13th, from Iraq to Iran, fool us twice. It's deja vu. The Bush gang wants war with Iran, a carefully orchestrated strategy. They are carrying it out. They are implementing it. It has long been openly disclosed. The deadliest weaponry that is being deployed is that of the United States as they prepare for the devastation of Iran and the staging of events, whether it's a faked attack on U.S. Shipping in the Straits of Hormuz or an event on American soil as well. It is a criminal clique in command of the ruling class in the United States, brothers and sisters. We are all within their target sights. We have to expose, we have to mobilize, we have to resist.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Our program today will be up on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. I want to remind you to attend the events in the Bay Area. Lynn Stewart, Michael Ratner, and Pam Africa, Fighting Back, No One Shall Be Tortured, Falsely Imprisoned, or Denied Basic Democratic Rights. Visit www.lynnstewart.org for details. We'll be with you next week.
And with Lynn Stewart for 1 hour next week, brothers and sisters.